The Guardian.
Hi, my name's Nick Watt. I'm now joined by Peter Hain, Tony Blair's last Northern Ireland secretary, who served in the post between 2005 and last year. Peter was in place when the historic power-sharing deal was signed last year between Sinn Féin and Ian Paisley's Democratic Unionist Party. Peter, The Guardian is this week serialising the memoirs of Jonathan Powell, Tony Blair's former chief of staff. You worked closely with Jonathan Powell in those crucial last years of negotiations that ended so successfully. Can I ask you to assess his contribution?
Well, I worked very closely with Jonathan over the crucial period which led up to the power-sharing deal, which I believe will be permanent. And he was an indispensable motor in the whole of the Tony Blair peacemaking machine in Northern Ireland. He knew all the facts. He had an encyclopedic memory for what had gone on before. He was extremely hot on the detail of it, which became important from time to time. And he was very good to work with. I enjoyed doing so. He would know much more about it inevitably than his boss did, just as any Secretary of State will have an official who knows something more about the detail of a particular policy area than you do. He also got on very well with the key players, particularly Sinn Féin representatives Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness, who were very professional and very tough negotiators. So he was very, very important to it. And when I published a pamphlet, a Chatham House pamphlet, last June on lessons for conflict resolution from the Northern Ireland experience, I acknowledged Jonathan as a crucial role.
Can I just ask how your relationship and indeed how the NIO, the Northern Ireland Office relationship, worked with Jonathan and with Number 10? Because I know some former Northern Ireland secretaries slightly resented the close involvement of Number 10.
I didn't. Though I did change something from all of my predecessors. I asked to be in all the meetings with Sinn Féin representatives, with Gerry and Martin, and also with Ian Paisley, because otherwise I couldn't really keep on top of the whole process. And since I knew more about the state of play from at any one time than did Tony Blair, it was very important for me to be there. And Jonathan readily agreed. I think they were rather surprised that I'd made this request and insisted on it. But he didn't resent it at all, and I didn't resent him. We were involved as a team in cracking this particular nut and worked very well together.
Can I just ask you, in the first part of the serialisation of Jonathan Powell's memoirs, he writes of how Tony Blair obviously brought the Republican movement in from the cold, and that the Tony Blair even tried to get a meeting with the Army Council of the IRA. They agreed to it, but it didn't happen. Now, that would have been quite a step, wouldn't it?
It would have been, but I think it shows that Tony was prepared to go an extra mile and more in order to try and bring Republicans in from the cold to sit round the Democratic political table. And he was always quite clear about that. And I do not think that had he had the attitude that prevailed amongst his predecessors, John Major, who of course played an important role through the Downing Street Declaration, and previous prime ministers from Margaret Thatcher onwards who tried to grasp this particular nettle, if he'd had their attitudes towards this, and even Jim Callaghan as a Labour Prime Minister predecessor, if he'd had their attitude to the Republicans and how you brought the IRA into proper serious negotiations to end their war and settle this whole problem, then I don't think we'd have got to where we did. He had an entirely different approach. He fundamentally disagreed with the IRA, that goes without saying, but he knew you had to deal with them in order to get a negotiated solution. So I think it was Tony's understanding of Irish history and his willingness to take risks in the interest of peace and democracy that eventually paid off.
Now, the IRA Army Council is relevant now because the Democratic Unionist Party, that's Ian Paisley's party, are saying that they are going to find it very hard to agree to stage two of devolution, which is the devolving of policing and criminal justice to Belfast. They're going to find it very difficult to support that unless the IRA Army Council is disbanded. We've just had an interview with Pat Doherty, the vice president of Sinn Féin, who says that if they get an assurance from the DUP that they are very, very serious about agreeing to that second stage of devolution, that he could see the circumstances in which the IRA Army Council would disband. Do you think that's quite significant?
Well, that is a very significant statement, self-evidently. But I'm not going to get into commenting on what is a very live issue in the detail of it, except to say that it is very significant, and that the issue here is not one of principle, because the DUP have always supported the devolution of policing and justice. Every major political party does in Northern Ireland. The issue is timing, and the sense in the DUP that the whole process has bedded down, that Sinn Féin's historic change at the beginning of last year, when they moved to support policing and the rule of law for the first time ever, following on the decommissioning of IRA weapons and the IRA giving up its war, that significant switch by Republicans to supporting the rule of law and policing within Northern Ireland had created quite different circumstances in which, for the DUP, the devolution of policing and justice now became a possible scenario, as opposed to something that could put Republicans at the heart of policing and the judiciary, which would be unacceptable to them. So I think that this is likely to be an issue of timing as to when this happens. The St Andrews Agreement, which I helped to negotiate in the autumn of 2006, set May as the target date, which is the British government's policy that my successor, Sean Woodward, is obviously following. But the issue of timing remains to be negotiated.
It's interesting that you mentioned the St Andrews Agreement that obviously set out the framework and the time frame in which devolution should take place. There are those who say, in the DUP and others, who say that yes, May was in the St Andrews Agreement, but it was actually in the appendix, so it's not a requirement. What do you say to that?
Well, that's always been the DUP's position, and the St Andrews Agreement was a facilitating framework agreement, and not all of the detail was nailed to the floor, because that was the stage of the process. You couldn't expect it to be. Nobody expected an agreement at St Andrews, and we got one within that context. So, I mean, whether we make May or not remains to be seen. The DUP's pretty clear that it would want more time, and Sinn Féin is committed to May, and the British government's position is that that was the target that was set. So we'll have to see how the negotiations on this matter unfold.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.